my friends. Greg Kokel here at Stand to Reason, trying to be as energetic as I can be, still fighting back the blues, the physical blues from my bout with COVID here over the holiday. And I was sick with it on the first of the year, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. My wife also, we didn't find out till a few days later what it was, but I just thought I had a cold. I wasn't knocked out the way my wife was, but I guess this is the way the Omicron works. And I had the scratchy throat and all that other stuff, and I ended up testing positive, and so I laid low for quite a while. Now I'm well past the CDC's latest recommendations for quarantine once you had it, and so I'm out and about doing my thing, but I'm still kind of feeling a little bit draggy as a result of it. Just takes the wind out of you. And driving to the studio today, I wanted to pull over and take a nap. And once I got here, you know, I had work to do, and it kind of kept me awake, but that's the way it is right now. So in any event, I'm back in the stirrups here and in the studio. Last week, I broadcast from home where it was better for everybody. And I think I just was like at half energy, but now I'm kind of trying to work it up to do my job here today to get back into the saddle. Just a couple of quick things to mention. We have two brand new STRU courses that have just come online this last week. Atheism Bumping Into Reality, that's a course that I taught. And I love that course, and I think you will as well. And then John Noyes has picked up the course on the problem of evil. Both of those came out just this past week. We have a number of other courses there. I think this is numbers 8 and 9 to make available to you. And just check it out by going to str.org. In the upper right-hand corner of the homepage, you'll see the STRU icon, and just tap that with your little mouse there, whatever, and follow the prompts and get behind the registration. Enjoy yourself, okay? Also, you can reserve your spot for Reality Apologetics coming up in Dallas on February 25th and 26th. That will be our live stream event, so if you can't make the event, you can live stream there, and there's information at realityapologetics.com that will help you to kind of get in the groove on that. And but we'd love to have you there in person, all right? And in fact, we have three events coming up this spring. We have not only Dallas on February 25th and 26th, we'll be in Philly on March 25th and 26th, and we'll be in Augusta, Georgia, April 22nd and 23rd. And apparently for the Philly event on March 25th and 26th, you can be signing up for that now too for the early bird rate. I don't know if you can still get that early bird rate there for Dallas, so you want to check it out. Just go to realityapologetics.com for all of the information. So one last thing, John Noyes's bi-monthly podcast tomorrow is being broadcast. It's called Truth to the Point Live, and he's going to be talking about the cancel culture. That'll be noon Pacific Standard Time, Los Angeles time, tomorrow, Wednesday. So if you're getting this podcast Wednesday, it's today, or maybe it just was if you're getting it in the evening. I don't know, but I'm letting you know in advance. Twice a month, John does that, and you can find that on Facebook and Twitter or YouTube. And I think the way it works is even if you miss the live thing, you can just go to it and still watch it, all right? So even if you're getting this late, you can still benefit from John's insights on the cancel culture. All right, got that taken care of. Now, once in a blue moon, we add a new player to our team as a speaker, as a content provider, somebody who shows up on the radio shows and podcasts and will speak for us at Reality and do events for us, write stuff for us and the like. That's content provider. And it's always a big deal for us to do that, since finding somebody with the right qualifications and who is also a good fit for our team is not easy to do. I mean, people will, you know, kind of knock on our door and say, hey, are you hiring? Well, generally, we're just not looking for people. We people come to us, basically. I don't mean directly. The circumstances present themselves when we have the right set of skills, the right set of personality, and all these background, everything. So that's why I'm really thrilled to introduce to you the newest member of our team, Robbie Lashua, who's on board with us. Robbie, welcome to Stand to Reason.
Hi, Greg. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, he's not with me in the studio right now. He's actually from his home in Phoenix, Arizona. And Robbie, you know, we've known each other for about 6 months or so, and you knew Alan Schliemann for a long time before that. And when he told us a little bit about you and about your heart for what we do and your background and your training and your personality and his friendship with you and all these other things, it just, things just kind of fell together for us. And so I'm really glad to have you on the team now, but I'd like you to bring our listeners, viewers up to speed a little bit. This, you mentioned to me that this, that Stand to Reason has been in your life for a long, long time. Tell us a little bit about that, Robbie.
Yeah, it's kind of surreal to be on the air with you today. And one of the reasons is I was thinking back to when did I first hear of Stand to Reason? When did I first start reading your books? You know, the Relativism book, Feet Planted Firmly in Midair, and Tactics. And I was thinking all the way back to 2004 when I was a Bible student getting my undergrad. And I started listening to your show because I had taken an apologetics class, and that must have been in 2004 on one of my old iPods, right? Like the old, like first generation when they just first came out.
The little spinning wheel
right? Exactly. Yeah, it was such cool technology, right, back then.
Yeah.
And I remember podcasts were new, and there you guys were. You were already on there. And so I started listening weekly through the podcast regularly 18 years ago now. Can you believe that? A long time ago. So I have been a disciple of yours, or somebody who's been in your garden, as you like to say, for a long time.
Right. And it to me, that's really a good thing. And I don't mean good because it's great to have like a sycophant on board. Somebody's going, oh, yeah, you know. But rather to have somebody who's deeply familiar with Stand to Reason and who has been kind of feeding at the trough for a long time. Because for us, it seems to me, it's not just a matter of understanding the content of what we do. There is a kind of a culture here. There's a way we go about it. There's a kind of a heartbeat that we have that I think is different from other organizations. Frankly, I guess that's true of every individual organization. They have their own personality, and they have their own character. And I think you being on board for all those years makes a big difference in you kind of having the heartbeat, so to speak, understanding what we're all about. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense. And thinking through those types of things, like, you know, when you guys had talked to me about coming on board, it made a ton of sense to me and my wife, because I love the ambassador model, right? And your mission and values, I'm on the same page with all of those types of things. And so, yeah, having that familiarity, you know, for over a decade with you guys, almost two decades, I think really has been a benefit to both you and to me in this entire process.
Yeah. So why don't you take a moment and tell us a little bit about how you came to the Lord? Now, you got a little bit of a baby face, so you look younger, but you're not just a kid.
No, I'm old, man. I'm getting up there in age. Yeah, I'm getting close to 40. I can't believe it.
Oh, there you go.
I know.
Well, that's
crazy.
Kind of broadly where our young guns are situated, like 38 to 42-ish, right in there, mm-hmm. you know, between John and you and Tim and Alan and Amy, et cetera, who I call my young guns.
Yeah.
So you're kind of right in the pocket there. But tell us a little bit about what kind of how you came to know the Lord, first of all, your spiritual journey a little bit, so we get a picture of that. And then I want to ask you some more things about the specifics related to your contribution to STR.
Sure. Well, the way I came to know the Lord was I was raised in a Christian home. My grandpa was a pastor. I'm from Northern Arizona, which is, there's a ton of Mormons up there. You know, Northern Arizona was kind of founded by the Mormon church, the LDS church. And so my family is from the Bay Area. And so my grandpa moved out there to plant a church before I was born. And my mom and dad met. And then I came along after they were married, and I just grew up going to church and hearing the gospel from my parents, hearing the gospel from my grandparents and my church community. And when I was, it was the summer of 88, and I was 4 years old, and I remember at VBS hearing it again and saying, yeah, I need that because I do a lot of bad stuff. I need to be forgiven of this guilt that I have.
Yeah, you are a pretty raunchy four-year-old, I'm sure.
Oh, man, I was wayward. I was way far gone. And yeah, it was terrible. No,
but, you know, this isn't the first time I've heard, though, that someone as young as that has a genuine sense of conviction of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, you got that early on before you were able to add to your list of offenses. You know what I'm saying? So good.
No, it's true. I often think, you know, I don't have an exciting testimony. I wasn't a cocaine addict, and then I came to know the Lord, and mm-hmm. I don't have an exciting, but what I have is he saved me from a young age, and he saved me from experiencing a whole ton of turmoil in my life.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. following Jesus just is better. So I grew up going, you know, doing all the church things, going to youth group, going to Awana, going every Sunday, being involved in the community. And I'm from a small town, so all the evangelical churches in town really worked together well. And I went to youth group at one, I went to Sunday morning at another, but the pastors were all on the same team. So just growing up in a really healthy environment for that, even through the teenage years, like I just wanted to serve the Lord and do missions trips and those types of things. And then I came to the point where I wanted to go to school. It was time to move away from my small town to the big city. And so I moved down to Phoenix to go to Southwestern Bible College.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say Tucumcari, New Mexico was the big city.
No,
where I don't. You came from.
No.
But I'm curious, though, during that time of growing up, did you, I mean, it sounds like the process was pretty smooth. You had a good group of people around you all the time. You had solid spiritual mentors in place.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a period of doubt that you struggled with personally in your younger life at all? Or have you ever had that? Or were you really solidly positioned so you didn't experience that kind of thing?
Oh, no, I had doubts, especially growing up, you know, because I had, through Awana especially, I had to read the entire Bible. And so I remember there was this one time where I was reading in the Gospels, and I came across that passage that talks about Judas being thrown into a field and his stomach being cut open and his guts spilling out.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this isn't what I remember. I thought he went and hanged himself.
Right.
And so I was probably 13. And I was having this crisis. My heart started pounding, right? I'm like, oh man, I have uncovered the secret to Christianity. Like, I thought this. I have figured it out. Nobody's seen this in all these years. And I found the contradiction. And so I called my grandpa because he'd been a pastor and been to seminary. And I was so nervous to talk to him. I mean, I can remember my heart just racing. I was in my room, you know, on a corded phone back then.
Yeah.
And, I called him and I brought it up, and I thought, I'm going to ruin his faith, you know, all these things. And he's like, oh, that's not a big deal. He's like, yeah, everybody knows about that. And I felt relieved. And then he explained to me a couple of different ways you could interpret that and how it's not a contradiction. It's just one's giving details, the other isn't. And right. Man, I felt so relieved at that point. Mm-hmm. And looking back on it, I'm really glad that I sought it out and brought it up instead of just letting it fester in my heart, because mm-hmm. I think it would have caused me a lot of anxiety.
Well, that makes me think of the multitudes that are confronting what appear to be problems or troublesome passages that they don't know how to resolve. And when they go to their spiritual betters, they don't get answers.
Yes.
They get, well, you know, other things. They get shined on in some way. And it was good that you had a grandfather who was in a position to answer that. And I'm not sure how much that has influenced your own trajectory since then, but it strikes me that was a grace of God to have that kind of
situation. No, it really was.
Situation.
Having him in my life really set me on a trajectory of following the Lord and thinking about my faith. It wasn't just mm-hmm. something I followed. But also having Mormon friends growing up really pushed me at a young age to start thinking about truth and how we can know what's true and what the differences between Christianity and the LDS Church are.
So were those obvious to you at the time, or did they all kind of seem the same and then you started to get smarter in a certain sense and see the distinctions, or how did that work out?
Well, I mean, I would play basketball, you know, with my friends who were Mormons from up the street. A lot of kids in town were Mormon. I felt like all the prettiest girls in town were Mormon, too, which was just
terrible. All the nicest ones, too.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's true. But we'd talk, and they would try to proselytize me. Like, my friends gave me a Book of Mormon, you know, when I was probably 10, 11 years old. And so I talked with my mm-hmm. parents about it, talked to my grandpa about it, and just sought through, okay, what does Scripture say versus what does the Book of Mormon say? And more than that, what do Doctrines and Covenants say? And so through
right,
just seeking
it out. Right, because the Book of Mormon is not a theological book.
No, it's not. It's not a theological book. And so through seeking that out, it really helped me to see, oh, you can discover the truth. Like, you can see the differences. And when they try to say, oh, we're an extension of that, it just can't be because of the contradictions in theology.
You know, that's something that I talked about this not too long ago, about how the Book of Mormon is the book that they give you to read to ask God if you could have a burning in the bosom that affirms the legitimacy and authority of the Book of Mormon. But of course, the Book of Mormon is allegedly an historical book. It's not theological. It's the other works that are theological that are the bigger concern. But then to posture, though, that, well, Christianity and Mormonism, well, let me back up and put it this way. Mormonism is just a denomination of Christianity. That sounded to me like what you were saying they were saying. Is that right?
Yeah,
we're just a different kind of Christian?
Yeah, I've had people say that to me, like, we're the same. And you go, well, but you don't think that because, you know, you're trying to get me to join your thing. So if you thought we were the same,
right.
I even remember from being
a
little
kid
thinking
robbing the church.
That. Yeah, we're not the same
thing.
That's
right.
So,
yeah, and I think of Joseph Smith saying, you know, when he's trying to find the right true denomination, being told by God that all the Christian denominations are abominations, that's why he's got to restore the lost gospel. So that always struck me as odd, you know. I mean, why not just shout it from the rooftops? If this is what your doctrine is, you guys have been wrong for 2,000 years. The gospel's been lost. You know, God bless you, but that's the way it's been. Now we have the gospel, and this is the real thing. Instead of trying to make, you know, a common cause with us in some way theologically. That always bothered me.
Yeah.
But in any event, though, you mentioned that you decided to go to school, to Bible school in Phoenix, the big city.
Yeah, yep. I moved down to the big city.
big metropolis there in Arizona. And Arizona Christian, right?
Yeah, that's what it's called now, Arizona Christian University. When I went, it was called Southwestern Bible College. But they've grown
Isn't
up.
Isn't that the school? This is the group they grew up. Isn't this the group that does the annual survey of like who's a Christian and who isn't a Christian kind of thing?
Yeah, it George
Barna. I was just citing that the other day.
Yeah, that's right. George Barna is there, and he's doing a lot of work out of Arizona Christian University now.
Uh huh. Well, I remember because when that piece came out just recently, and it was we talked about it on the air, an assessment of the Christian worldview.
Yeah.
Rather, an assessment of which Christians, how many professing Christians, which amounted to about 65% of the population, which, good news, bad news, right? I wrote about this in December. That sounds good news until you read the fine print. And then you find out these people who are professing Christians, it turns out that only, I think, 9% of those are what, according to the assessment in the survey, are what would be called committed disciples. Mm. So that's not good.
No.
But then when you look at what the 9% committed disciples amount to, they don't believe that Jesus is the only way of half of them, that Jesus is the only way. A third of them don't believe in the Trinity. A quarter of them are moral relativists or something like that. It's like, what? These are disciples who reject these. Anyway, so that came out of the school that you went to. I'm not blaming your school for the statistics.
Oh, no.
Obviously.
They're just reporting,
They're just reporting. So, and is that where you got your bachelor's degree?
Yeah, I got my bachelor's degree there in Christian ministries with a minor in youth ministry. And then after graduation, mm-hmm. I started doing youth ministry at a church. I was the high school and junior high pastor for 5 years. And my wife's a couple years younger than me. So after, once she was getting close to graduation, that's when we got married in 2008. So we've been married for almost 14 years now. And yeah, was doing youth pastor stuff. Then I started working at a different church where I was a youth pastor for a while. And during that time, I went to Phoenix Seminary because it's here. A lot of my friends were actually moving out to go to Talbot to get the philosophy MA like you. And I thought, man, that'd be so sweet. But I had a wife and a house, and I couldn't swing it. And so I thought, oh, I'll go to Phoenix Seminary. So I did that, and I got my Master's of Divinity from there. And then I really wanted to do apologetics more. And so I went to the Biola MA program.
Mm-hmm. And did you take that at a distance study? Is that right?
Yeah, the module where you do all the work from home, but then you come out for 2 weeks and you sit through the two weeks of courses with the professors. Yep, that's the way I did it.
Did I ever do a lecture for you during that 2 week session? Because sometimes I've come out
for
that.
You went over there. It must have been in 2012, and then Alan Schliemann too. He came and spoke on Islam while I was there.
Oh, I see. Okay, so. So that was our first personal contact, but you had been kind of benefiting from the stuff that Standard Reason has been giving years before that. Yeah.
Oh, at that point, I had been teaching tactics to my youth group students for a long time. So yeah, I've been benefiting from you guys for a while.
So you ended up though on a pastoral staff and in a very unique pastoral role. For a church, a very enviable one, I would say. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so after I was at my current church for about 5 years, we started talking about me becoming an associate, and I really wanted to do apologetics more in the local church context. And so I became the pastor of apologetics at my church, which was awesome.
I like the ring of that, the pastor of apologetics. I've actually only met maybe two other people. In my entire work with Standard Reason, two other people who had a similar role in their local church, that is a pastor of apologetics. And I mean, I just think it's, in a way, it's good news, bad news, right? Good news that you got to do that, and so do those other two people. But what about all those churches that don't have anything like that?
Yeah, the sad thing is that pastor used to be synonymous with being apologist, and more nowadays, pastor is synonymous with being a CEO. And so I think that's one of the things that's happened culturally in the church, is that we have, gone away from apologetics, but now it is a specialized area when it used to kind of just be an aspect of any theological study or training.
Yeah, yeah. So how did that play out for you in terms of the work you did there at the church? As a pastor of apologetics, were you focusing on the adults or youth or what?
Well, when I had been the youth pastor, we did a lot of apologetics. I actually took a trip with Alan Schliemann through STR to do one of the summer mission trip on pro-life, and so I did that with Alan. We did one with Brett to Berkeley for atheism. Right. Yep, when he was with you guys,
the late great Brett Kunkel,
the late great. Yeah. Oh,
only in the sense of no longer with Standard Reason, but now doing wonderful work with Maven, his own organization. Right?
Yeah, he's a great guy, and that trip was just very influential. Both of them for our students. They kept coming back, being so much more confident in their faith because of going out and engaging people and because of the 6 months of preparation we'd done before the trip. And so I'd done apologetics a lot with the students, and it got to a point where adults were asking, hey, I don't know this stuff that you're teaching my kids, and it seems like I should know it. Can you teach some adult classes? And so I'd start teaching adult classes, and then it kind of spiraled into, hey, why don't you just do this with adults full time, and we'll continue doing apologetics with the students, which they have done with the other youth pastors who followed me. But so I started when I became pastor of apologetics. It was with adults, and so I did a Mormonism mission trip with adults. We went to the Manti Miracle Pageant with an adult group that we'd trained up in Mormonism. I taught classes. Mission trips, right? We did mission trips, not just apologetics, but we did mission trips to the Philippines. So we studied a lot on Roman Catholicism before going to that. And I also did a weekly podcast as part of my job. It was called Christ Culture and Coffee, and it was an apologetics podcast. I was working with one of my students who had just graduated high school, and he needed an internship. And so we started this podcast, and we had it running for over 3.5 years. So getting close to 4 years time.
So you co-hosted with the other student?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you were working with him kind of in a mentoring relationship. Is that the
idea? I was mentoring him because he was going to Grand Canyon University for theological studies. And so through that time, I was mentoring him and teaching and training him apologetics, and we would do the show together. It was great. So that was a really cool aspect of my job.
So there's a lot of people, Robbie, I'm glad we're talking about this in particular with your background, because there are a lot of people who think, well, the reason we only have like 2 or 3 apologetics pastors in the country is because we don't need that kind of thing. Not for young people, because they're postmoderns. They don't believe in truth. They don't resonate with that. They're in their feelings. They blah, this, that, the other thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm interested to hear your response to that in light of your own experience with the young people and adults in your local church.
Well, I would say that, you know, it's the same thing that people have been saying forever. So many students are leaving the church after graduating because they get to college and they hear things that they've never heard before. It's not only that they don't have a response to the things they're hearing. They've never heard these arguments against their faith before. And so my goal, even as a youth pastor, was I want to tell them what they're going to hear before they hear it. And if they're going to walk away from the Lord, I don't want it to be because of intellectual issues. I want it to be because of ethical issues. Now, I don't want them to walk away at all, but I would tell them that if you walk away from the Lord, it's not going to be because you think this is a better idea or they have better evidence. It's because you want to do some sinning and you don't want God on your back. Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was talking with a group not too long ago who asked me about the threats that their students are going to face when they go away to the university. And I think the temptation is for us to think of the in a sense, academic challenges to Christianity that you were just referring to. But I think that arguably the largest one is moral.
Yeah.
And that's sexual. I mean, there is all, especially for guys, but not just for guys, there's all of this temptation, this smorgasbord, so to speak, that is laid out for the taking for the most part. Certainly a lot more latitude than when, 50 years ago when I was a college student. And even, but that was the counterculture. So it was opening up even then, but still. And what's standing in the way? Well, religion, right? You don't want religion getting in the way. And so all of a sudden, these other issues take on a stronger importance. The arguments or the challenges people raise against Christianity have more cogency because there's another motivation to want to believe them and to walk away and do your own thing. It reminds me of what we were talking about this at staff meeting today with Tim Barnett. And Tim has famously said a lot of times people, you can correct me if I get this wrong, but it's something like, raising challenges or raising issues or questions? Are the questions looking for an answer or are the questions looking for an exit? And I think this is what we face a lot with young people. When they are appealed to by the world with all of this flash and glamour, all this freedom, especially sexual freedom, that entices them, if they don't have that root, they're goners. And the what might otherwise be answerable and somewhat even shallow challenges to Christianity take on a lot more significance for them.
No, that's very true. And they need to understand that Christianity has good evidence and reasons for it. That's where apologetics comes in. But then they have to, I think through the high school years, they have to cultivate the relationship with Jesus and really trust in the fact that he has their best interest in mind. And that the morals of Scripture aren't because God is trying to steal our fun, right? He's not the cosmic joy kill, but because he really does care about our well-being and he knows what's best for us. But that is such a difficult thing, like you said, when you go to school and there's the temptation and there's the expectation of partaking in this hedonism. It's a tough place to go if you're not strong in the faith.
You know, you made a comment, Robbie, and I'm talking here with Robbie Lashua, our newest speaker, content provider at Stand to Reason. We'll talk more about some of the things he's going to be doing in a minute. But You mentioned how important it was for youth in church to go deep with Christ while they're young before they go out. And as I think this next series of realities that we're starting in September, so the 22-23 series, we're going to be focusing in on deconstruction and deconversion, which is a huge problem in the church. And though I think it was tempting to think maybe 5, even 10 years ago that people ended up deconstructing or leaving their convictions when they get to college. And so how do we deal with that and address that? These college students are facing challenges they can't answer, and this is undermining their convictions. It turns out that most of those people actually weren't convinced even in high school. Mm-hmm. And so they lost their convictions in high school, not in college. College is just where it all became obvious and evident. That means that the time spent in the local church for the youth when they're in high school or in middle school is the critical time, which is why reality focuses in on that group of people.
Yes. Yeah, I think that that's great. And so I think we have to be doing that. Go ahead.
So let's talk a little bit about what you want to accomplish. When you look at your own life spiritually, and I know we're all kind of in a journey, what I wanted to accomplish 50 years ago, 45 years ago, is different than what I want to accomplish now. I mean, we have some experience. We make a difference in some ways. The Lord helps us. We get gifts. We develop our gifts. And then we start seeing things that directs our trajectory in a way that we think will be most productive for the Lord. So tell us a little bit about that journey from your perspective and how the place that you find yourself now as a newbie here, one of our young guns that stand to reason, how that fits in with your larger trajectory, the way you understand your personal development and your hopes for making a difference in the kingdom.
Well, I think that my heart, and all of our heart, you know, is just to be faithful to the Lord with whatever he gives us. I often think of the parable of the talents, where, you know, the king gave out different amounts of money for people to invest and do good with. And obviously, you never want to be the guy who had the least and buried it and did nothing with it. And so I look at, you know, and assess what God's given me with time, with talent, with treasure, all those types of things, and say, what can I do? How can I maximize this for the kingdom and being faithful? And I think that apologetics is something that God's just given me a passion for, and I'm decent at it. And I really love reading, you know, high philosophy and apologetics and stuff that, you know, most people roll their eyes at, and then being able to explain it to sixth grade kids. And so that, I think, is something that I can do and I like to do. And so what I want to do, like, you know, like you at Stand to Reason, and I think of like Elise Strobel, is that we're translators. We help people to understand these things on a street level so that they can use it in their walk with the Lord. And so this new adventure with Stand to Reason plays right into what I was doing. And it's kind of interesting, Greg, because you always say bloom where you're planted. And I'd probably heard you say that for 5 years and I never believed it. And then I heard it and I thought, he's right. Like, I just gotta do my best where I'm at, right? It's not about having a title or a position. It's about doing the work. And so that was my focus for a long time, just saying, what can I do with where I'm at for the Lord, with what he's given me? And I did that. And now that's my goal at Stand to Reason, is to be here, bloom where I'm planted, continue to help others understand apologetics so they can defend their faith, but also so they can be disciples who don't deconstruct.
So Robbie, what are some of the things that I don't know, for lack of a better phrase, turn you on in terms of this broader field, topics wise? You know, I can think about particular things that I gravitated towards. Actually, initially, I got into apologetics not because it was a big factor in my becoming a Christian, and same thing with you. That wasn't the factor like it was for J. Warner Wallace or Lee Strobel or some of the others that we know who apologetics made the big difference. But rather, it took on a different role in your life. For me, I was talking to people on the street about Christ, and they were asking questions I couldn't answer. So I had to figure it out. And this drove me to people like Francis Schaeffer and Josh McDowell. Or this is the early days, and C.S. Lewis, this is back in the 70s. And these were the guys that I drew from, and I was deeply influenced by Schaeffer. But that, you know, then began to form me and direct me. And then I met J.P. Moreland and got my M.A. Phil, and that opened up all new vistas for me. So that helped to redirect some of my interests. What about you? Do you have just areas that you think you can make, you're looking forward to making a particular contribution in?
Yeah, I really do love the resurrection. Like, I think it's so important, and I love reading, you know, Michael Lacona and Gary Habermas and those guys. And so that's one of the areas that I really like to study and to talk with people about. And I think that it is it's not an untapped area of apologetics, but I want more and more Christians to be able to understand how many arguments and evidences we have for that and mm-hmm. start a conversation with that. You know, a lot of people are stuck with, you know, God's existence. And I think that's great. But you can convince somebody that a God exists, but then you got to get to, well, which God exists, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's another step and another step. And I think in our culture, that's so instant gratification and soundbite, you know, culture, that people need to be ready with what I would say is the best apologetic, the reason for the hope we have in us, which is mm-hmm. Jesus rose from the dead. And he said, if I trust in him, he'll raise me mm-hmm. from the dead.
Well, there are like two basic approaches. One is a two-step, and the other is the one-step. Mm-hmm. And the two-step is a classical view. You start with God, and then once you got God, then you figure which God. And this is where you can bring Jesus in to make the case. Or you just start with Jesus, you know, mm-hmm. and then kind of work backward from that. And that's the one-step approach. And Gary Habermas is really good at that and whatever. So when I heard you speak the first time when I was reviewing some of your materials, I think you were talking about critical race theory or something related to that. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, I like speaking about those types of things, especially, you know, current issues. You got to stay up on the culture of what's going on. So transgender stuff, critical race theory, CRT, homosexuality. And I know Alan, you know, has done phenomenal work on those issues. Right. But I really like those. I really like resurrection. And I do like Mormonism and Islam as well. Mm-hmm. Just studying those to help people as topics.
Yeah, to pursue. Yep. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So what we have in mind for you, obviously, is speaking. You'll be doing some breakouts in the subsequent upcoming realities. We have September.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong list here.
February, March, April, yep.
Yeah, February 25th and 26th in Dallas, and then March 25th and 26th in Philly, and then April 22nd, 23rd in Augusta. So you'll be on the docket for that, doing breakouts. Do you know what your breakouts are going to be for that yet?
Yeah, I'm going to do a breakout on the resurrection. It's a topic called 500 Women Died Following the Body. And it sounds like a J. Warner Wallace talk, but I thought of it before I even knew who J. Warner Wallace was.
So. Wait, what's the title again? 500 Women Died.
Women Died Following the Body. Yeah, you got it. 500 Women Died Following the Body. And it's just five facts about the resurrection put into a sentence that you won't forget. So the 500 witnesses, the embarrassment of the women, following his followers.
Oh, I see. That's your mnemonic device. I was trying to figure out. Well, that's clever. 500 Women Died.
The only reason I still use it is because I taught it at a junior high camp in 2007. And a couple of years ago, these guys who were in seminary came up to me and they said, hey, I remember you taught this to us when I was a kid and I still remember it. And I thought, well, it worked. So maybe it'll work for more people.
That's called making a talk sticky.
Yes.
Right. There's a book called Made to Stick. And it's about some secular guys, Heath and Heath. And by the way, the title itself is sticky. It's easy to remember, Made to Stick. And they talk about how you make ideas sticky so people don't forget them. But we had one of the main things that we want you to do, and we could spend the rest of this hour talking about this, and then next hour I'll get to callers, whatever. But the main thing is I'm looking back now I'm really jazzed to have you on board for a lot of reasons, Robbie, okay? And one of them is because this is going to help me realize a dream that's almost 28 years old. Well, wait a minute, Stand to Reason is 28 years old. Your dream, yes, it's a dream that went back right from the beginning of Stand to Reason. And it was just an idea I had, but it wasn't my idea. I got the idea from somewhere else. I got the idea from Macintosh, all right? Because back then, Mac was just getting rolling, right? And so how did they, from a marketing perspective, how did they promote their enterprise, their broadly their communities? That was the first digital computer. Who talked about communities back then? When you talk about digital stuff, nobody did, but Mac did. And then they started. And then they had these things called Mac user groups. I don't know if there might be somebody still around that I remember the Mac user groups. So they established these user groups, so people of kindred spirit with regards to this new digital world that was developing, and especially the digital project that was a product, rather, that was that that was a groundbreaking product for that time, the Apple, the Macintosh. These were vehicles by which they could expand their influence and their sales and expand this sense of the growing community. Well, I thought about that when we first started Stand to Reason. Mac user groups, Stand to Reason user groups. I had this idea, but we have never, ever had a real opportunity to develop that. And back then, it was an idea to, from a marketing perspective, to expand our impact. But I have since come to think of it more and more as a way of expanding and certainly our impact, but also our community. Because I think this is what makes Stand to Reason so powerful, is not just the content, but the sense of community of the people who identify with Stand to Reason, with what we do, et cetera. And so this is, the time is ripe now for, you know, what might be called STR user groups, but what we're calling outposts. So tell us a little bit about the outpost concept as you understand it. And you are our first outpost director. In other words, you are the guy that's going to make this into a reality. And give us, sketch it out a little bit, what this looks like in very general terms, because we're in the formative stages of that process. And help us to understand what we're going to try to accomplish with that project.
Yeah. So STR Outpost are going to be reproducible groups that teach apologetics, not exclusively, but primarily in the local church context. And so as pastor of apologetics for, you know, the past 5 years, I've kind of understood how to do apologetics in a church context. And we find, unfortunately, that there isn't a lot of apologetics going on in most churches in our country. And so we wanted to, I've wanted to do this for a long time, come up with a way to instill good thinking and apologetics within the local church, because there are Christians who have doubts. There are people who are struggling, and they want to ask questions and they want to get good answers. Mm-hmm. And so what STR Outpost will look like, you know, and this again, like you said, we're just in the beginning stages of this, but we really want to focus on three aspects to it. Now, Stand to Reason is phenomenal at content, and so providing content is going to be one of the things that we want to do. Another thing that we want to do is provide community. Like you were saying, community is so vital, and I think if you're doubting in isolation, that's the fast path to deconstruction. But if you're doubting in community, that can actually strengthen your faith and make you a better ambassador for the Lord. Mm-hmm. And so we want to have strong communities in the local church using STR content like STRU and some other things that we'll develop to teach and facilitate conversations so that people can be bolstered in their faith, have confidence in it, become deeper disciples, growing in the knowledge of Jesus, and be ready to go out into a culture that's somewhat hostile to Christianity, mm-hmm. and be good ambassadors for Jesus. Mm-hmm. So we want to have content, we want to have community, and then we also want to have some coaching on how to run these. And that's where I come in. How do we set these up? How do we do a good job with church relations? How do we show pastors that we want to come and supplement what they're doing, mm-hmm. not come in, you know, guns a-blazing saying, hey, we're here to save everything. That's not true. I've been a pastor for 16 years. It's a hard job, but we want to come alongside the local church and do what we do best as the part of the body that we're a part and, mm-hmm. and give it to the local church so that they can disciple people well locally. So that's kind of the big idea of Outposts.
Yeah, I like the way you put it too, that we want to come alongside local churches and do what we do best. I mean, we have skills and abilities in these areas. Mm-hmm. It's just like the body of Christ. We see in 1 Corinthians 12 and Romans 12, the body of Christ is a body, and each has a different part that does something else to help the whole body. Not every pastor, this is a radical understatement, not every pastor is an apologist, right?
No.
They got their hands full with a whole bunch of other stuff. So if we can come alongside, or indirectly we stand to reason, through the means of local outposts of stand to reason minded people who have material and have understanding, have answers and whatever, and are guided and build a local boots on the ground, kindred spirit community, encouraging and training each other. Well, that's going to be a tremendous help and benefit to the local church, and also take a lot of pressure off the pastor, mm-hmm. where we can do, we indirectly through the outpost can do for him what he's not able to do with his own staff, probably.
Yeah, I think it's a tremendous asset to the church because so many people have questions, right? And then who do you ask? You email your pastor. How great would it be if, you know, a pastor had this person over on the side who runs the SCR outpost, and they can say, you know, we got a whole group of people who meet, who talk about those things. I'm sure they would have answers to your questions. I'm sure they could steer you in the direction you need to go to find answers to your questions. I'm going to send them an email, and I want you guys to connect. I don't see how any church wouldn't want this type of thing going on. I also think it'll help with students, like you were saying. If students grow up in a church seeing adults get together and express their doubts and ask hard questions and seek truth together, I think that would become the normal expectation of how Christians operate for youth, and they wouldn't be afraid when they go to college, or they wouldn't be taken aback to these questions or objections that they, right. they face. They would see, oh no, this is just what we do. We're not afraid of doubts. We're not afraid of hard questions. Mm-hmm. And so creating a culture like that in the local church in our country, I think would help discipleship to, like you've been saying, we gotta, you know, kind of circle the wagons, and we gotta take care of ourselves, and we've gotta disciple our people well, mm-hmm. because of how hostile things are getting. And I think this could be an aspect of that.
And we won't be reinventing the wheel. There's a couple of other organizations who have done this well. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'm researching and looking at organizations like Reasons to Believe. They've done a really good job with Reasons to Believe chapters across the nation. William Lane Craig's group, Reasonable Faith, they have local chapters. I know one here in the west side of Phoenix, and they've done a great job with that. And so we're looking at other people who have done a good job of creating communities all across the country to talk about apologetics. And we're going to try to glean wisdom from them and see how we can help to do this in the local church context. Mm-hmm.
So what kind of time frame are we talking about for this? Because I have a suspicion that there are people listening and they're thinking, hey, I want to do that. We want to have an outpost in our local church, and I think I could lead one, or I've got some friends, we can get together. So we're, you know, this sounds good to us. So tell us a little bit about the time frame of development before, in a certain sense, we become public and begin to actually aggressively launch new outposts around the country and even in other parts of the world. In fact, by the way, it was just about 3 or 4 weeks ago that I spoke for a Reasonable Faith event in the Soviet Union. Well, no, it's not a Soviet, in Russia. There's no Soviet Union anywhere, but in Russia. you know, and I've done that for, because that's where they were meeting, you know.
Wow.
Bill Craig's group had a group there, and they wanted me to speak. So this is a kind of thing, this probably underscores, it's not just like people are going to be using only our material, but it's the Standard Reason kind of gathering then can draw from other sources too, just like Reasonable Faith draws from us, partners with us in these things. So we've been partnering with Hugh Ross and Reasons to Believe and Bill Craig and Reasonable Faith for in their enterprise for years and years and years. So we see the same kind of flexibility here. But tell us a little bit about the time frame for the future.
Well, the time frame is, don't anybody get too excited, because we are not starting these things tomorrow, right? It's going to take some time to develop. And this really is my primary focus for this year, right? That's what I'm doing. I'm the outpost coordinator. And so I am developing and putting together, what does all this look like? How is it going to operate? How are we going to roll it out? And so I was talking with, you know, our executive director, Meg, yesterday, and we really think that hopefully, right, tentatively, by August, we'll be able to roll these out to places who would want to start them. Now, we're going to have some guinea pigs over the summer, and we're going to work out the kinks. But hopefully, you know, by the third quarter of the year, we'll be able to start implementing STR outposts across the country. We've already got 15 churches who've expressed interest in wanting to do this.
It's through the grapevine kind of thing, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. People I've known, people you've known, who just trust the STR brand so much that they say, yeah, if you guys are doing it, we want that at our church. And so there will be a big demand for this. But if anyone's out there who would like to get put on a list for when we do get ready to roll it out, you can send me an email and I'll add your name and your church to the list. And then once we're ready to start promoting and start rolling things out, we will definitely be contacting you.
So your email is?
It's Robbie.
This is a brave moment here. This is a risky moment here.
Yeah.
Going public.
I can do this. It's Robbie, R-O-B-B-Y, at str.org.
Okay.
Simple.
So what Robbie's asking now is, if this seems like something down the line, when we get ready to officially launch, you might be interested in and would like to be contacted about, then send Robbie the relevant information, your name, your location, some things about your church, whatever. Okay. And then that's it. He's going to file it away and then save it. Don't keep sending him emails, though.
Please don't
pestering
do that.
Him, because he's going to have his hands full with laying a foundation. And then when the time comes, then he'll be able to go back to these candidates and say, okay, who can we take on now? As we expand, we do not want to do this too quickly. And this is really important. We want a long-term effort here, a long-term enterprise. And this is why we have plans for you, Robbie. And I know these are your plans too, to talk more intimately with our TV crowd and with the Reasonable Faith crowd. How exactly do you guys do this? How do you formulate it? How do you protect your brand with people you don't know, you know, that are now carrying your name and having meetings and the like? How do you best coach them? How do you formulate this? And these are, maybe it's good to say this, these are going to be independent enterprises, even though they will be Stand to Reason, outposts. They bear a name. There are going to be largely, there's going to be a lot of independence there. Now, how that looks as time goes on, we'll work out those details. But in any event, though, I'm really excited about this, Robbie, because for one, this is a dream I've had for a long time for Stand to Reason. And I think strategically, it is going to be really, really significant, because we already have a big footprint. I know this because when I travel around, and you know, and you travel and you talk to people, and these are just like you told me, this was at the student at the school there, you know, yeah, we are, I read the book, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's just one little example of a lot of places where that kind of thing takes place. No matter where in the world I go, I get this kind of feedback every 28 years. But the idea of, in a sense, supercharging that impact and making this a part of my own personal legacy, so that when I get ready to hang up my own cleats, you know, little by little here as time goes on. And I'm not leaving anywhere soon. But when I do leave, I don't want to leave people as orphans. Mm-hmm. I want to leave a solid team of people behind, like Alan and Tim and John and Amy and Robbie. And I'm wondering, I hope I didn't leave anybody out. But no, or now as time goes on, maybe expanding even more. But to have this solid core that are responsible for the life of Stand to Reason. And most people don't realize this. You do more than any now that you've joined the team, Robbie, is that so much, I'm trying to think of a best way to put it this, so much depends on others in terms of the success and the impact of Stand to Reason. And another way of putting it is so little depends on me. And I know it sounds odd because people associate my name with the organization, but I don't do most of the work. I don't have most of the impact. I do what I do. You guys do what you do. Everybody does what they do. And all this synergy creates a massive impact that the Lord uses in the life of the church writ large, in the world. And, of course, this has impact on the local church, too. And now we have a strategy in place where we are able to be more intentional about seeing the life of apologetics grow in the local church, and that's the outpost strategy that you're responsible for, Robbie. So,
yes.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add here? We got about a minute or so to go, and just in parting thoughts here about your role.
No, just really excited about collaborating with people all across the country and even internationally. You know, obviously, at first they'll need to speak English, but I'm looking forward to us being able to work with brothers and sisters all over the place to help them train their people in apologetics so that they can be confident in their faith and they can go out and they can defend their faith well. So I just I can't believe that I get to do this. God is just good, and I really do appreciate you, Greg, and just all of your long distance mentoring through many different types of technology over the years to help me be trained up and to be a good ambassador. So looking forward to being with you at Stand to Reason, working with the team and seeing how God works through all of this.
Yeah, well, me too. And yeah, you're right about English. It's good that it's the trade language of the world, fortunate for us.
Very
so
fortunate.
It makes our job a lot easier. And we get a chance to make a difference all over the world at SCR. And it's great to have you on the team. Again, that's robby@str.org. And by the way, you might have heard me say, like, if you want to schedule me or Alan or Tim or John or Robbie for speaking at your church, go to darcy@str.org. And you think, oh, I don't know how this works. First name plus .str.org. You're not going to be able to do that with greg@str.org. All right. That's not my email. So I'm not in that system. So don't even try that. If you want to get in touch with me, you're going to have to do it through Darcy or somebody else or Amy Hall or whatever. But Robbie, great to have you on board, brother. And we'll be doing a lot more work together in the future.
Thanks, Greg.
Keep you. All right. That's it for this hour, friends. Greg Kochel for Stand to Reason. Give them heaven. All right. Bye-bye now.